Jerry Bader Show 1035. Jason was inundated with self-proclaimed professionals on trains. They knew everything. They knew every last detail. And you were, I saw you. You were very polite to them. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they knew exactly how many cars were in the train. Whatever. By the way, the deadline is 4 p.m. The NFL deadline is 4 p.m. There are fewer than 1,000 tickets left. They'll sell out. There's no way the Packers are going to let this game be blacked out with less than 1,000 tickets out there. Fewer than 1,000. That's not going to happen. And it's going to be cold. Boy, if you are going to the game, by the way, I don't usually do a lot of public service announcements. For the love of Pete, don't drink. I'm telling you, do not drink alcohol. Seriously. Yeah, and Jason says, if you have any self-respect, do not be the one on the jumbo screen without a shirt. You morons. And if you're an attractive woman that's going to show your body off, only do it for like 10 seconds. Just long enough for the TV cameras to see you. And then put some clothes back on. By the way, I'm kidding. I wouldn't mind. You wouldn't want your daughter to be the one out there, would you? Nor would I. I kid. No, nobody should be showing any skin of any kind. None. Zero. Don't drink. Bundle up. Bundle up for the weather. It's going to be really cold. And hand and feet warmers if you can get them. You really should. I mean, if I've got everything you need, you know, I stay comfortable as long as my feet stay warm. That's where you get in trouble. Feet and hands. I've got the ski mask type hat. I've got snow pants. All of that is fine. Not that I plan on going to the game, mind you, but for cold games, I'm usually okay. This one's going to be really cold, though. I mean, really cold. I'm not trying to dissuade you from going. I'm just saying, don't be stupid. I saw a thing on TV news here in Green Bay last night. They're going to have the paramedics and everything ready. You know they're going to deal with cases. You know they are. You get that many people, and you're going to get a couple of cases. It's going to happen. But just don't let it be you. I mean, just bundle up the best you can. But, boy, it could end up being one of those games where you can say you were there. Of course, you know what? You know what would be... Somebody like Gallup or Quinnipiac, you know what question they should ask of people old enough? Were you at the Ice Bowl? They should do a survey in Wisconsin. You know, let's see, that was 67. Let's say you have to be 20. So you'd be 65-ish. You'd be in your 60s. Were you at the Ice Bowl? It would be entertaining to see how many people said yes. I bet you would get about 1 million Wisconsinites. Well, you know, thinking it'll never come back to them, it'll be totally anonymous. There were what, about 45,000 people there. I'll bet you would get at least five times that. Yeah, at least. Yeah, you know, I'll bet you'd get 200,000 people. Jason says that's impossible. No, it's called lying. Well, they just lie. Well, because they don't know. They don't know. They know you're not going to know. All right, I don't have a lot of time, so I want to get to this, but we have to quick make. As long as I've jumped into the Packers, here we go. Packers 49ers. The line on this game is much closer than I would have thought. I would have thought the 49ers by about a touchdown. I have seen anything from 2 to 4.5. I've seen it all over the board. There is something, because Packer fans are superstitious, you don't want to say out loud. Now, and we haven't discussed this, the 15-yard flag for falling on Aaron Rodgers, I thought that was completely protecting the collarbone by the refs. That, I mean, I really don't think that was a penalty, to be honest with you. But I was glad to see it. Good, they're gonna protect that thing. It's really cold. And if there is still any final, I mean, it could be sore, you know what I mean? You know, that type of injury. It could be much sore in the cold. But anyway, he's back. He's got a game under his belt. Randall Cobb has a game under his belt. The offense should be better. Jason has 17-14 there, but he hasn't put down a winner yet. I'm not going to go that low. I know that the cold's going to keep the score down. The weather is such a wild card in this game. I don't believe Green Bay has the defense to stop the San Francisco 49ers. However, the elements may assist them more than it will assist the San Francisco 49ers. I just don't know that they've ever come up with an answer to Colin Kaepernick and the 49er offense. They've lost to them three times in 16 months. Jason literally tossed a coin and lost because he picked the 49ers. 17-14 San Francisco saith Jason. I think they're going to put some points up. I think the Packers are going to put up, even in this weather, more than 14 points. 31-24 San Francisco. I want to believe their defense can stop it. I just don't. You don't have Clay Matthews. You don't have Johnny Jolly. I don't think they can do it. I don't think with the 49ers defense that Aaron Rodgers, with the offense as healthy as it's been all year, Eddie Lacy, a more experienced running back than the one who struggled against the 49ers to start, I think they hang with them. I do think they hang with them. But I just don't think they can quite pull it off. That's what I believe. All right. I want to start this topic in New York City, but it's going to be much broader than that. New York City has an incredibly liberal mayor. This is a fascinating story, and I've talked about it before. Liberal Democrat Bill de Blasio is now the mayor of New York City. He is far, far, far left. He is going to undo everything that has improved life in New York. I mean everything. Stop and frisk is going to be gone. You are going to see New York City become a very dangerous city again. You name something on the liberal wish list, and he's promised to do it. Universal pre-kindergarten. De-emphasizing standardized testing of public schools, reining in aggressive street stops by the police, all of the things that have improved New York City. And you look, and I've saved the worst for last, by the way. I haven't gotten to the other one, to one other item. I've saved the worst for last. You look around and you wonder, what the hell was New York thinking? Did Michael Bloomberg really damage the Republican brand that badly with his stupid Nanny Nation soda bans and other crap? Apparently, he did. That's about all you can figure. That they went off the deep end. They looked at the reforms that have made their city one of the safest in America, irrespective of size, mind you, and turned the clock back on that. They're partying like it's 1977. It's just incredible. Here's the final element of this, though. Among the Democrats' early priorities are higher taxes on city residents, making more than $500,000 a year. He is all about income equality. The new mayor, whose campaign theme was Ending a Tale of Two Cities, has made clear he would like to be a national leader in trying to combat income inequality. And he's going to do that by taking from the rich and giving to the poor. This is the plan for 2014, if you're not aware. This is what they're going to use to take the attention off of Obamacare, income inequality. And they have come up with a specific issue with which they think they can bludgeon Republicans, the minimum wage. On the state level and the federal level. We didn't get to it on the air yesterday, but Congressman Reid Ribble, we talked about it off the air and just ran out of time on the air. Reid doesn't think it should be a federal issue at all. If there's going to be a minimum wage, he's very federalist in that regard, thinks it should be state by state by state because geography is so different. Okay. Mary Burke is proposing like a 30% increase in the Wisconsin minimum wage. That's hacking off her liberal base. I think that's her mindset, to make it so low that Republicans will look evil if they say no. That's what I think the strategy is there. And I think you'll see this around the country, relatively modest increases. Now look, they won't even give up that little bit. It doesn't matter how much you want to raise the minimum wage. It doesn't matter how much you want to tax rich people. You don't make everyone richer by taking from the rich. But this Robin Hood mentality is what they plan on running on in 2014 and 2016 with whomever the Democratic nominee is. I admit there's income inequality. It has grown dramatically under President Obama, four times faster than it did under GW. Think about that. So what is the answer? About 3 years ago, Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs, he's probably more famous for the Ford commercials now, huh? Than Dirty Jobs, even. But he had a cable TV program, Dirty Jobs, where he apprenticed in skilled, it was a great show, by the way. Oh, it was a wonderful show, really was. In skilled labor. In 2011, he went before a Senate committee to talk about the skilled trades and the horrible gap that we had. It was about 5 minutes long. I'm going to play this for you, and then I'm going to comment on it. Jason, go ahead.
I'd rather take a small portion of my 5 minutes and tell you about my grandfather, because he's the reason, ultimately, that I decided to come here today. His name was Carl Noble, and he made his living in Baltimore as a master electrician. He was also a plumber and a mechanic, mason, carpenter. Everybody knew him as a jack of all trades. And I remember him mostly as a magician. For most of his life, my granddad woke up clean, and came home dirty. And in between, he accomplished some things that were nothing short of miraculous to me. Some days he might reshingle a roof or rebuild a motor, run electricity, you know, out to the barn. He helped build the church that I went to as a kid and the farmhouse that I grew up in. Basically, he could fix or build anything, but to my knowledge, he never once read the directions to anything. He just knew how stuff worked. I remember one Saturday morning when I was 12, I flushed the toilet in the same way I had been flushing it for 12 years. The toilet, however, responded in a way that was completely out of character. There was a rumbling sound followed by a distant gurgle, and then everything that had gone down reappeared in a rather violent and spectacular fashion. Naturally, my granddad was called in to investigate, and within the hour, I was invited to join he and my father, who's right behind me there, out in the front yard for about 12 hours of forced labor. You know, there was pipe welding, and there was picks, and there was shovels, and there were blisters and laughter and maybe some questionable language. But by sunset, we were completely filthy. The new pipe was installed. The dirt was back in the hole, and our toilet was back on its best behavior. And it was one of my favorite days ever. 30 years later in San Francisco, my toilet blew up again. And this time I didn't participate in the repair process. I just called my landlord, and I left a check on the kitchen counter, and I went to work. And when I came home, the mess was cleaned up, and the problem was solved. As for the actual plumber who did the work, I never even met him. It never occurred to me to meet him. What did occur to me that day was the fact that I had become disconnected from a lot of things that really used to fascinate me growing up. I no longer thought about where my food came from or how my electricity worked or who fixed my pipes or who made my clothes. I didn't think about who made anything. There was no reason to. I was less interested in how things got made, in fact, and more interested in how things got bought. Well, at this point, my granddad was well into his 80s. After a long visit with him one weekend, I decided to do a TV show in his honor. Now, today, Dirty Jobs is still on the air, and I'm here before you guys hoping to say something useful. So here it is. I believe that we need a national PR campaign for skilled labor, like a big one, something that addresses the widening skills gap head on and reconnects the country with the most important part of our workforce. Right now, American manufacturing is struggling to fill 200,000 vacant positions, I'm told. And there are 450,000 openings today in trades, transportation, and utilities. The skills gap seems real, and it's getting wider. In Alabama, a third of all skilled tradesmen are now over 55. They're retiring fast, and there's really nobody there to replace them. Alabama's not alone. A few months ago in Atlanta, I ran into Tom Vilsack, our Secretary of Agriculture. Tom told me about a governor he knows who was unable to move forward on the construction of a new power plant. The reason I thought was fascinating. It wasn't a lack of funds or a lack of support. It was a lack of qualified welders. In general, people are surprised that high unemployment can exist at the same time as a skilled labor shortage, but they shouldn't be. We've pretty much guaranteed it. In high schools, the vocational arts have all but vanished, and we've elevated the importance of higher education to such a lofty perch that all other forms of knowledge are now labeled as alternative. Millions of parents and kids see apprenticeships and really valuable on-the-job training opportunities as vocational consolation prizes, best suited for those not cut out for a four-year degree. And still, we talk about creating millions of shovel-ready jobs for a society that doesn't really encourage people to pick up a shovel. In 100 different ways, I think we've slowly marginalized an entire category of critical professions, reshaping our expectations of a good job into something that no longer looks like work. A few years from now, an hour with a good plumber, if you can find one, is going to cost more than an hour with a good psychiatrist, at which point we'll probably all be in need of both. I wanted to come here today because guys like my granddad are no less important to civilized life than they were 50 years ago. Maybe they're in shorter supply today because we don't acknowledge them the way that we used to. We leave our check on the kitchen counter.
That's 3 years old. That's
work gets done.
That's yeah. Leave the check on the table and not worry about how the work got done. That's Mike Rowe, 3 years ago before the Senate. In the brief time that I'm going to have, I want to comment on that and why liberals are really to blame for the income inequality. And it's exactly what Mike Rowe is talking about. It's 10:53.
The Jerry Bader Show.